Welcome to Magic Hour with Meg and Mel. This is our first kickoff inaugural episode, and it's a bunch of experimenting at the moment, and we hope you enjoy.
He didn't ask me for sex. He didn't ask me to cook food. Like, none of those things, the things that I'm good at. He didn't ask me to clean.
I'm good at sex and food. I'm good at sex and then making you a sandwich.
Yeah, but instead you want me to give you money. That's not a thing I'm good at making, like, on purpose. All the money I make is, like, because God said so. Like, you know, that's just kind of how it is, you know, and I'm okay with that.
What do you mean, because God said so? It just, like, puts it in your path?
Yeah, pretty much like every job I'm like, okay, God. And I call God the universe. I just use God because it's convenient. I'm just bullshitting with my friend here, right? I'm like, okay, God, I'm ready for the next gig. And then he shows me the next job I'm supposed to do. Okay, God, I need to, like, I don't want to bounce this check. Not that we use checks anymore. I really don't want to overdraft. And, like, something will come up. I'm like, oh, I need to do a reading. And then a reading shows up. Or, hey, I'm going to Plymouth Meeting Mall again. Please let there be people I do readings for, or people who show up for my meditation or yoga class. And they show up.
So I have a question. So that's actually, like, a good segue. So you do meditation, you do reading, as in oracle cards and tarot cards, and sort of just, like, insight.
Yeah, I'm a psychic spiritual leader and medium. Spiritual advisor. Not yet leader. The cult is being developed. Workshopping it.
you're the leader of your clan anyway.
And workshopping the cult.
You're workshopping the cult. I love it. Actually, I have a book over there about American cults. Do you know that Cheesecake Factory is owned by, or it was owned by a cult, started by a cult?
Why does that not surprise me? They want us fat and complacent so they can slip by us. And we're too slow to catch them.
Well, that's just America in general. They just want us fat and complacent.
Exactly. Hello, legalizing marijuana. But I'm not going to go there now.
That's so funny. Okay, so you're a spiritual psychic medium. I'm in marketing. Culture is something that interests me, I think, more than anything. And culture in the way that, like, we used to wear hats and a hat represents something, and the way people dress today represents something, and, you know, consumerism represents something, and, like, what we do and the rituals that we have. And then I think, like, spiritual insights sort of go hand in hand with that. It's like it's like the other side of the coin. It's like we go through these rituals and the daily motions of our lives, and somewhere in there is some sort of whatever we want to call, like, higher self, spiritual self, self that maybe somebody is curious about within themselves. Do you have any sort of, do you have a certain type of person who comes to you? Do you have people looking for certain types of answers? What's it been like?
Are you asking me who is my target audience?
I guess I am.
You know, I've been dodging that question ever since I learned that you should write that shit down in order to build a business. Because honestly, my target audience is everybody. You know, everybody who feels disenfranchised, disillusioned, everybody who's feeling like a prisoner. Everybody who's feeling like they got dealt a bad hand. Everybody who's, like, doesn't feel worthy of the shit they got. Like, it's everybody.
I'm always so curious. Like, I always have a curiosity for, like, okay, well, if I pull a tarot card, what's it going to be? And sometimes I do it on my phone. I have this app that I paid way too much money for, like, a long time ago. And I'll pull a card and I won't like the card. And I'm like, oh, trust apps. This app doesn't work. But I want to know about my palms lately. I've been thinking a lot about palm readings.
Yeah, I looked into some palm reading. It's actually quite intricate, and it's an ancient art.
It's intense.
It's ancient.
I tried to read a little bit about it, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll take a book out from the library, because I have to go to Hong Kong. That's a long flight, so maybe I'll read about palm reading.
I don't know. Honestly, I'm like, where's the audiobook? Because, like, I was reading it, and I was like, how?
Do you find that, like, people come to you like, oh, I just had the loss of a family member, or I lost my job, or I'm looking for something? It's always people looking, searching, or do you think it's more like curiosity? People are looking for answers?
I get a mixture of both. Typically, I perceive the pain first. You know, people who come up to me are, yes, they've lost loved ones, or that they don't know where to go next in their world, or they need someone to confirm that the feelings they're feeling, their feelings that they're feeling right now regarding another person doesn't make them feel good anymore. So they're in a significant amount of pain.
So a lot of like love stuff.
There's love stuff on the telephone, because I do telephone readings. I do get career stuff. I do get some career stuff. I get a lot of people who are just like, oh, well, I'll just take a general reading. But they always have something specific in mind, but they like to test they psychic. So they don't want to tell me shit. And it's like, paid me.
Yeah, but I think that's like therapy too. It's like peeling the onion. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. therapist, if I'm going to trust you and be vulnerable with you, you have to rip away that first layer. And it's the same with their psychic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, and especially the way that I market myself. Yes, you're going to leverage your personal power so you can create a more radiant life. That's what I tell them. And they're just like, huh? I never heard that before. I don't even know what that even means. And so I get to explain it to them. And, you know, I'm using Oracle cards, not tarot cards. Okay. So that's a whole other discipline for me, ebook pending. They are curious. Whenever anyone approaches me, they are curious. And especially because I don't look like the typical psychic.
I just took a picture of you and I was like, you're in a blazer. You look like you do what I do for a living.
Because I do.
In a totally different way. But you do. You look like a businesswoman.
Because we're bosses.
We are bosses.
Yeah. I mean, when you are a boss, you dress like a boss, you think like a boss, you act like a boss to the best of your ability, and you become what you think about, what you pray for.
Thoughts are things, they say. Thoughts are things.
Yeah, and words are magic. Like, gone are the days when I'm like, no, I'm just looking for a job. No, I'm like, I'm building a career. I'm building a legacy. And my legacy is going to be important. So it needs a fucking boss.
Absolutely. Can I ask you a random question?
Of course.
Okay, so I think about how I think about spirituality a lot, but I don't necessarily incorporate it into my life.
Says who?
What I was thinking, and this might not even have to do with that, but what I was thinking about is there's some sort of like ancient magic to writing something, like physically, like writing a spell. Do you think that because we type everything on a phone or a computer, that takes away a bit of the magic from word, the power of word and the written word? Because it's not really written.
So words are magic. Yes. Words spoken are magic. Words written are magic. Words typed are magic. The effort you put into your spell, whether it's writing or typing, is part of the magic. I think a lot of us are under the belief that typing removes us from the experience of putting something in black and white. It's just really a different kind of magic. For instance, like, I used to write everything out on paper and then try to retype it. And lately for my blogs, I've been typing it all. And I found it to be just as much, if not more, cathartic and stirring than if I had written it with a beautiful pen on beautiful paper in a beautiful book. Because the magic doesn't just lie in the words, it's the actions and the intentions and all of your subtle energy of loss and hope and discovery and joy that aid in the spell as well. So,
wow.
We can speed that part up.
No, I love that.
Everything is connected, and that's a whole other conversation because, you know, there's science behind it and everything, but like, we stopped believing in magic because it became inconvenient. when we discovered that we could not dictate how the magic was going to perform, when the magic was going to perform, and how we would feel about the magic that was performed, it was easier to eschew it, to let it go, to invalidate it, rather than roll with it. I mean, human beings are fickle and self-centered and scared beings, you know? And so when we encounter things that do not go the way we want it to go, we rebel and we don't want to be in pain. So when something disappoints you and you're in pain, it's easier just to say, fuck it, I'm done, rather than like, how does this still help leverage me to doing and getting and feeling the way I need to feel and be and do, you know? That takes a lot more discipline, takes a lot of character, and it takes this thing called faith.
Patience.
And patience, yeah.
It's magic is not always quick.
Hell no.
There's no quick, easy way of doing magic. It's a patient, intentional thing.
So, like, I love it how back in the day when we would do research, we'd go to a library and we use this thing called a card catalog. And we would go to the card catalog and we'd find the book, and then we'd have to read the book to find the information we want. Like, even nowadays, research is just like type it into the computer. Shit, use ChatGPT and it's going to tell you the answer. Type it into the computer and get your answer instantly. We've lost the curiosity and the thrill of the hunt when it comes to searching for things that create meaning in our lives. We've lost the thrill for the hunt.
Yeah, there's something, I guess, to trying to figure something out or working out a problem in your mind, rather than getting the answer instantly.
Yeah.
I do love to be able to be like, what's the history of a fez? And like, be able to read all about that. And, you know, like how I'm so interested in hats lately. So I just keep talking about hats.
Yeah, you are.
Like, you know, we all used to sort of have different ways of doing like turbans. I think head coverings are so interesting because head coverings are ancient and we use them to this day. And maybe they started out as something that was for protection, but it very quickly translated to status symbols or telling somebody your position, like, this is what I do for a living, or I have more money, or I'm this religion, or I stand for this. They represent something.
So, Meg, if you could design a hat and wear it for the next month, every day you leave the house, what would this hat look like? Just for the next month, for the month of March, what would this hat look like?
It's hard to think about a hat that I would design for myself, because I kind of would like one of those old school sort of like head wraps, then it has like the long like scarf on the side.
Oh, I've seen those.
And those can be really cool. But I think I would have to do something.
Oh, like the United Emirates ladies? Brim.
I don't know. I don't know who the...
The airline. So they have like this like little pillbox hat, but it's got like a long scarf.
Oh, that's a very interesting way that they did that. I have to look that up because they're mixing like sort of the modern Western like pillbox hat aesthetic. You know, that's very like late 50s, 60s, early 60s. And then also like their traditional sort of way of having a head covering.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I think that's really cool. I don't know. It's hard for me to pick something for myself. I'm better at being like, this is what I think this should be for somebody else or for something else.
Okay. Well, if I was going to wear a hat for the next month, what would it look like?
Well, I can't help but go, well, what do psychic hats look like?
Oh,
and all I can
God.
Think of is another turban, but with like a jewel in the center of it. But that's not the hat I would design for you.
No, that's not the hat I would design for myself either. If I was going to wear a hat for the next month, it would be one with ear flaps and a back flap and like one of those ones that like you have a brim, but it pops up, it goes boop in the front, and it would be so
furry, but like not like hair like fur, because when that gets like wet, not that my hair gets wet really, but like when it gets wet, it feels weird on your face, but maybe like a mixture of like curly lambs. Ooh, like shearling. Oh my God, it would be so shearling. And like,
I love this.
Oh, and I think it would actually have to be camel colored. Either camel colored or like green, Kelly green suede, like this beautiful wall in your house. So like Kelly green suede with camel colored shearling with ear flaps.
What wall? This wall?
That wall, baby.
This one's called Calypso Green. I'll have you know.
Green suede.
But I love it with the plants.
Yes. And oh, I would wear this hat religiously for the month of March as long as I had matching shoes. And preferably, oh, I already have a Calypso Green purse. So yeah. That's what I would do.
What kind of shoes?
All right. So I was a little bit debating between like a booty. Like a half inch heel booty or high riding boots. Can you imagine? Not thigh, like calf length.
Yeah.
Oh, knee length. Calypso green leather, not suede,
nice.
Riding boots. So I could always tuck my pants into them because I don't want my ankles to get cold, even though I consistently wear high waters. I don't know why. I think I look cute, but oh my God.
I have two pairs of socks on right now. One pair was like a low top and then a wool sock over it because my feet get so cold in the winter.
That's going to be me later today.
Oh, I have to have so many socks on.
Yeah, that's going to be me later today. I'm going to go to Bethany's before I have to go watch the baby. And her house is kind of cold. So I'm two socks. I'm sweaters. I sleep in the sweater, you know.
So the woman you're talking about, she lives like in a park, right? She like basically lives in the park.
It kind of feels that way. Her backyard like is in the park, but it's like a fenced off area. So it's like,
but you can easily get into the park, right?
Yeah, you can totally get, you just like exit the fence and walk to the path. That's the park.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And do you take the kids out there?
No, I don't take the kids outside. What do you think I am? No.
I have no idea what you do with the
kids.
Jeez
Louise. We hang out in the house where it's safe. These are not my children. Okay? If she wants them to be active and run around outside, she can do that herself.
Okay.
I mean, we'll go outside. If we're going to sit outside and like bask in the sun, okay. But they're children. If I'm going outside and playing outside, I'm playing the way Melanie wants to play. But they don't want to play the way Melanie wants to play.
How does Melanie play? This is a great transition.
Okay, so, well, I will say this much. Clementine, I gave her those koosh. It's a koosh ball with paddles. So we were playing koosh paddles for a long time in her backyard. But then, like, whatever, they have dogs and whatever. So, but we did find another area. There's a sunflower kind of garden.
Ooh.
Because her property is kind of part of a colonial village, so there's
that's
the safe.
So fucking cool.
Yeah. So we play koosh ball, but Melanie wants to play like soccer when she's outside, like a formal game of soccer, or she wants to just lay there in the sun, or she wants to film a video, or she wants to like read a book. Something that is like engaging where she isn't really left with just like, what do we do next, George? You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Reading a book is fun. I got to talk to you a little bit the other day about how we've both read Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. I didn't know you were a fantasy fan, like, or a sci-fi. I don't even know what to call it. I think I lied.
I have not read Lord of the Rings. I tried.
Oh, no,
to
you watched the movies, though.
No, I watched the movies religiously. So, therefore, I have ingested Lord of the Rings. But Harry Potter's, yes, I did read Harry Potter's. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Lord of the Rings books are tough. And, like, even in that first book, there's like just like they go off into song and you're like,
I want to read them.
What does it sound like even?
Oh my God. Like I love
them over
there.
Old ones.
Did you even see the Lord of the Rings movies?
Yeah. I watched them on one of my trips.
I want to read them. Actually,
I have to watch The Hobbit. I mean, I've read The Hobbit.
The Hobbit was good. I actually want to listen to The Lord of the Rings because I find that because of my life is so busy, sitting down and reading is not something I can really do. But if I listen to The Lord of the Rings, the unabridged, unembellished version of Lord of the Rings, I would be very happy. I think I would. Yeah. And Harry Potter, I think I'm going to listen to them next too.
You know what, though? I loved Harry Potter, and I just recently finished Harry Potter. I'm going to Hong Kong again, but I'd gone in November. And when I went, I watched every single Harry Potter movie. And then when I got back, I re-listened to all the books.
Oh, wasn't that great?
It was so good. Oh, but I have to tell you, I'm still sort of hungover from it.
Yeah.
It's intense. Yeah. I actually think it kicked me into a depression. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I don't doubt it.
I really think it did.
The books are way more intense than the movies.
But also, I didn't want it to be over.
Exactly. That's why I don't finish series.
I didn't want Jim Dale to stop. Like, I was upset when it was over, and I'm like, this is all there is to the story.
Wait,
I don't know.
Wait, no. Did you hear the word?
Oh, the TV show?
There's a new Harry Potter movie coming out.
I heard, but I think this is not true.
Well, I read it on the internet, so it's got to be true.
I got scammed by this. I was told they were going to make a movie version of the Cursed Child of the play. Did you see that play?
Which play?
They have the Cursed Child, which is an extension of the story.
Did you see that?
No, but I heard it was great, and I really need to go. And maybe we should try to do the lot. We can join a lottery for a Friday night, Mel.
Cursed Child. I don't know. Is Daniel Radcliffe going to be in it? I get very attached.
No, but if we got free
actors.
Tickets, wouldn't you just want to go to the show with me on a Friday night?
Yeah, probably. But do you know I have a phobia of sitting in theaters?
Why?
Because they're cramped.
Oh.
I get like.
I know you've been in other cramped spaces. I've seen you there.
I have, but I can't say I was like.
But this is for Harry Potter.
Yes, this is for Harry Potter. I would do it. And I'm totally Googling now. New Harry Potter movie. Let's see. Who's Harry Potter and the Cursed Child trailer 2025 based on a book. This is on YouTube, though.
No, and it's a fan-made trailer.
Okay. As of now, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child movie has not been confirmed.
I know.
Oh,
I was upset.
Screen Rant. Oh, I totally bought it. Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. I think people, some of those actors might be hesitant because of they think J.K. Rowling's transphobic and all that jazz.
No comment.
I know. I have no comment. I want to share and talk about. Anyway.
Listen, everybody has a right to be wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody has a right to be right. It's, you know, the bigger picture, guys. We need a movie.
Yeah. And Woody Allen got to make all those movies, and he did all those things.
Oh, no, she did.
No, I'm sorry. I have to say, though, and no, this is controversial. I've talked about this with my friend, Doug. Unfortunately, I don't like Woody Allen. I think Woody Allen sucks. But Blue Jasmine's one of my favorite movies of all time. Interiors, Hannah and Her Sisters. There's a couple of movies I can't help but just love.
Honestly,
that he made.
I couldn't name a Woody Allen movie that I actually remember.
Good for you.
I think maybe a little bit that one, maybe a little Annie Hall because of the clothes, but it just didn't, it's like too talky. Not that I don't like dialogue. I like dialogue, but like, it's
are
like,
you into Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So if you're going to ask me to choose between Woody Allen and Quentin Tarantino, like every time. But the way Quentin delivers dialogue.
He made Jackie Brown. He made Death Proof. You have no idea. I love Jackie Brown.
Kill Bill 2.
Kill Bill 2.
Oh my God. Pulp Fiction. I'd like to name more. I can. It's somewhere in my brain. I've seen almost. The Hateful Eight. What about the Glorious Bastards? Fucking Rango.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Django. Django Unchained. Like, seriously, like that dialogue is melodic.
Dude,
Woody Allen's dialogue is neurotic.
So good. Yeah, I know. Woody Allen is very neurotic, but there's a couple of movies like that's just like women. And those movies were just like a group of women. They're fucking awesome. And Blue Jasmine has Kate Blanchett in it. And it's.
Yeah. But isn't she supposed to be some depressed, manic, depressive type of girl?
It's based on not Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. The other one. Streetcar Named Desire. It's Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Wilson.
Yeah.
Done Harry Potter. Done
Woody Allen style.
Woody Allen
style.
So
it actually resembles nothing like Streetcar Named Desire.
No, it's good. It's so good. It does.
All right.
And Kate Blanchett played, what's her name?
Blanche DuBois.
Yeah, Blanche in Streetcar at BAM.
Oh.
And I got to see it at the New York Public Library.
Oh, my God.
Like, you can go there
you
and
saw
watch.
Her with your real eyes?
No, I had to watch it at the New York Public Library at a recording of it.
Oh,
and I
okay.
had to say I was a student of blah, blah, blah. Like, I had to fill out all this paperwork to watch it. And I just wanted to see it.
You know what? That don't even get me started. That right there pisses me off.
Yeah, why is it so hard to watch it?
Why are people going to gatekeep information at a
fucking library?
Like, that's ridiculous. Like, they're like... Like, there's no reason why the Vatican has, like, this secret archive of all this information that you have to be some sort of scholar, like
You have to Tom be a Hanks. Jesuit priest.
Yeah, right? Or Tom Hanks
or
in
Tom
the Da Vinci
Hanks.
Code or... or the devils and angels, demons and angels or whatever. Why do you have to be like that in order to access information? Information should be free.
Yeah, you know? But even if it's like it's the library, why can't any schmo off the street go, you know what? I really am interested to see A Streetcar Named Desire. I would love to see it and go and sign up and fill out the paperwork and be able to go fucking see it.
I know.
Why do you have to be a professor at somewhere else or like a student studying theater and blah, 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 blah? Like, why can't we just have access to education if we feel like learning about something?
Because they hate
or
us.
Or seeing it.
Because they hate us.
I think that they do. I started, especially mm-hmm. with what's going on in the news in the world, they hate us because if they didn't hate us, they would stop all this fucking pointless, endless war.
Well, honestly, in order for a capitalistic society to thrive, somebody must be oppressed.
Somebody has to be at the bottom, I know.
So if they
but it
keep
can
us
also
at the bottom, they can thrive.
By age or by this, it doesn't have to be...
What? By age?
Not by age, but there's... Yes, you're a child and blah,
yeah.
blah, blah.
Yeah, no, it's...
And phase out. I mean, there's different ways to do capitalism. There's not just one way. It doesn't have to just be endless war.
No.
It's. I'm sorry, I'm disturbed. And the fact is, it's like, what do you think that does on people's psyche? Like, that's in our collective... Do you believe in the collective consciousness?
Yes, I know there's a collective consciousness.
Can you tell me about what you know there, like, about it? I'd like to know more about it. I want to hear your take.
Well... It goes back to everything is connected. You know, that game 7-6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. There's no way to divorce yourself from the environment, from the media, from, you know, the economics, from interactions. It all trickles down. And we know this, but we want to not acknowledge it because it scares the shit out of us. And so right now, the collective consciousness is very afraid and defensive. And lightworkers like me are constantly working on helping people understand that there's no reason to be afraid and that you don't have to defend anything because everything that is for you will be for you. Anything that's not going to be for you will not be for you. But that speaks too much like faith and belief, and that's something that people just don't want to get down with.
Well, it's frustrating, the idea of something being for me or not being for me if I want it to be for me.
Well, then if you can want all, you can want something all you want, but does it show up in your life?
No.
So there. So if it's not showing up in your life, then clearly it's not supposed to be for you. But in your quest to have it show up in your life, you have to ask yourself, am I inviting it into my life, right? Am I inviting into my life the opportunity to, I don't know, lose weight?
No, I'm not. And you know what? That pisses me off about myself.
So then, you know, you look at, well, okay, if I do believe that I can be a better, a size that makes me feel better, then how am I inviting that opportunity to myself? Am I watching what I eat?
Wow.
Am I exercising? Like, that's the magic. When you identify something that you want and then you craft behaviors and strategies, which is what I do, is I give people strategies so they can invite that thing in. And then, and like, they work their way up to it. You invite it in and then decide if you really want it. Because let me tell you something. Skinny people are evil. Skinny people are hungry all the motherfucking time. And they are evil. And so, like, I don't need to be skinny. I don't want to be, like, fat. I can do a little, like, Rubenesque. I'll be Rubenesque.
No, I just want to be a person who eats relatively healthy and, you know, runs and exercises regularly, because I know that when I'm exercising and using my body, it makes me feel great. But I also love to, like, eat like shit and wallow in my own depression.
Well, shit, nobody's perfect. But yet, that sounds fucking perfect. Like, yeah. Because, like, hey, we can't be 100 all the time. I mean, we would burn out. We'd burn out like supernova.
All right. So, Mal, this was a great, just kind of, what is our kickoff? It's like us experimenting and trying to create a flow and getting used to each other on the mic. And I think this was great. I want to do it again. I don't know about you.
Yeah, let's do this again soon. That is Brad Pitt speaking to Edward Norton in Fight Club. Thank you.
I love Marla Singer.
Marla.
I've seen so many movies. We'll talk movies.
You have no idea. Fight Club is my anthem.
Oh, really?
I actually started writing a 12-step book for spiritual recovery based off of Fight Club.
Oh, I cannot wait to hear this. Join us next time. Over and out.